Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today. If you don't know about flyer deals on Instacart, this message is for you. Flyer deals are like scrolling through your favorite store looking for deals, but you're scrolling your phone and maybe you're in bed because getting delivery doesn't mean you have to miss deals like you get at the store, like the one creamer that doesn't make your stomach hurt or the pasta sauce you can't not buy when it's on sale. So download the Instacart app, shop flyers, and never miss a deal on one of your favorites. Plus, get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes.
Want to grow your business fast? With TikTok ads, anything is possible. If you've ever thought about advertising your business on TikTok, now is the time to do it. You can drive more customers to your websites, sell products right in the app, and you can even use TikTok's creative tools to easily make content and find creators to help sell your products for you. Find new customers today. Just open your browser, type in getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTok ads, and grow your business fast.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
Well, hello. Good morning, everybody. TGIF. Glad to be here with you. It is Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester. We've got Max Power producing for us. We've got you over the air. 97.5, 1240 AM on KFH. We've got you on our video streams on 12 News Connected on Facebook, YouTube, and X. You can leave us comments there on the social media sites. You can also leave us voice messages. Had a great one yesterday. That's through the Odyssey app. So if you're listening to us on the app, you can also get in touch with the program. If you're at work listening and you can't call, you can still get in touch with the program. Just hit that little microphone and you can leave us voice messages. One of our favorite ways to communicate, honestly, on the show. We'll have a giveaway today from HTO. We have all kinds of good stuff as the Royals complete the sweep. They get through that 16-game stretch. We'll look back on the stretch that we looked at as a critical one early in the season. I'd say they passed with flying colors. NBA, NHL playoffs continue as well. And some NFL talk, I think, Tommy, is we get a little reaction to that George Pickens trade. I think it's interesting. Not just from the Cowboys' perspective, but like, what are the Steelers doing now? They still don't have a quarterback, really. And are they going to be capable of doing anything, quite frankly, to make some noise? So we'll get into all of it as we make our way through this day, this Friday, the day to end the week. How are you, Tom?
I'm good. Happy Friday. We've got a nice weekend in store, it sounds like. Nice day today. Beautiful weekend for Mother's Day. Happy early Mother's Day to all the moms out there. Looking forward to getting right into it.
Yeah, happy Mother's Day to our wives, our mothers, everybody out there, all the women. We appreciate everything that you do. It does look like we've been blessed, honestly, with this weather. We got all the rain. It was a nice, steady rain over a few days. Now we get some sunshine to soak it in. We're headed toward the summer. In good fashion, Tommy, we're headed toward the summer. It's good golf weather.
Yeah.
We appreciate Crestview Country Club. You guys know that listen to this show is a great supporter of this show. I played 9 holes yesterday. So I'm out there on the South Course. Everything's looking great. Crestview's awesome. You bust out. You grab a cart. You get out there. For me, I got an hour and a half. Let me go see if I can cram them in. So I'm out there playing at Crestview yesterday. First 4 holes here. And I never would bring this up, but I think people know that I'm not a great golfer, but I go bogey, par, bogey, bogey. So I'm 4 over through 3 or 4 4 or 3 over through 4. 3 over through 4. And I'm like, what is this? And then the wheels fall, and then we get like we spring a leak in the roof at the business. And so for like the next 5 holes, I'm on the phone in between shots trying to put I was so mad. I was like, you got to be kidding me. I'm playing a charity tournament today with our buddy Brandon Zenner. Maybe it'll carry over into that. But that was as good a start to a round, Tommy, as I've had in a decade, probably.
Well, you just got to continue it through for an entire round at this point.
I can't when I'm on the phone in between, like screaming at people who did something that made us have a hole in our roof.
But yeah, I would love to get out and play golf this weekend. Let me ask you a question, because you're married, obviously. I'm married. It's Mother's Day weekend. Mm-hmm. And I bring up that term and I want to get your take on it. Mother's Day weekend. Apparently that's a thing. It's not just Mother's Day. It's Mother's Day weekend. I asked the question, could I play golf on Saturday? And I got shot down very quickly. It was, no, it is Mother's Day weekend. I'm like, well, like Father's Day weekend isn't a thing. It's Father's Day. I get a day. I get one day. But apparently, no, it's a whole weekend.
Yeah, I think you know the answer to that question. My wife has a birthday month. And that's a real thing, right? Like, it's... Like I'll be thinking about stuff and I'm like, oh, what if we did this in July? And she's like, July, that's my birthday month. I'm like, yeah, it is. It sure is.
You're right. Yeah, yeah. You're correct.
I apologize. How silly of me. I mean, it is what it is. You know, maybe if you took both your boys out with you, then it could constitute as a Mother's Day weekend win.
Yeah. Not a bad idea. Might have to figure that out.
I think that's the way to go. I don't know. Like I asked my, like, what do you want? She's big into tennis right now at Crestview. So we figured out something tennis. I was like, let's do something like tennis. What could be good for your tennis? By the way, speaking of Crestview and Mother's Day, they have a huge Mother's Day brunch. We tell you guys about stuff that they do that's not just like golf or whatever. They have a massive spread. They have these events all the time. They have a Mother's Day brunch. It's very popular and delicious. They have great, you know, chefs and stuff out there that make those things awesome. Yeah, I think you're going to have to concede the weekend. I mean,
I already have. I mean, it's already done. I mean, it was shut down very quickly.
What's really going to throw you is as your boys get older, our kids are a little bit older. Like it doesn't matter what weekend it is. It's filled up with stuff, right? I think there are two birthday parties for ours tonight. And then tomorrow we have a practice, a game, another birthday party, another game on Sunday, and I don't even remember all of it. There is no, like, the kids' activity calendar does not yield to any holiday. Take that while you can get it, because that's whew. And all, because I'm playing this charity golf tournament today. All of today, which is a lot, is going to fall on my wife and Tom. It's Mother's Day weekend. You think I'm going to hear about that? Yes.
And it's not just, I mean, you know, a lot of these like charity tournaments that I know great organizations all around town put on. A lot of times those are morning tournaments and you're done, you know, middle of the day. I know the one that you're playing in today and it gets a little late. Like it's kind of
a big one. Like, I don't know what I'm getting into, but yeah,
it's a fairly big one. There are a good amount of alcoholic beverages that typically flow at a tournament like this. So I would just prepare yourself for it. It'll be fun. You'll have a really good time. But
till I get home.
Did you prep your wife on that? Like, it might be a little bit later of an evening.
The good news is I am another member of our team is one of her very best friends, one of our good family friends. So I'm hoping that might soften the blow just a little bit. Like, oh, I'm getting to see, you know, your friend. And like anything that would typically get me in some hot water, maybe I'll just like blame on her. Like I tried, but I did. I warned. I said, listen, I got to get out there early because there's like all these activities for the kids at school today. It's like, I can't do any of it. Like, I got to get out there pretty soon after the show. And I was like, they don't have dinner scheduled till like 6 o'clock. Like, this is, I don't know what to say, except like, it's going to be late.
And tonight, it's a good dinner too. I mean, it's like, it's steak and you know, they're firing up the grill and all of that. So I would not, if I were you, skip out on that. I mean, maybe take your steak to go if you can and eat it like a caveman on the way to the activities.
Oh, here we go. It's going to be a day. We love it. Happy Mother's Day, everybody. You guys deserve it. I know we have some great listeners and moms who listen to the show, and thanks for putting up with our shenanigans as our wives do. And you know, our moms did as we're growing up. We appreciate everyone out there. You can get in touch with the program. We're going to start you off when we come back with some Royals talk, because that was about as good as it could have gone in a stretch of baseball, quite frankly, that they got to have. Like, when you're looking at the season, when you know what they're going to have to do to be competitive and reach the goals that, you know, some of us, myself included, a World Series appearance have set on them, they're going to have to do this kind of thing. And they've done it. And they get to keep playing at home here for a little bit. So we're going to look back at that. We'll look ahead at that schedule. It's all coming for you here as we open things up on Sports Daily. Stick around. We're coming right back.
It's time to get back to the sports talk.
All right, let's do this thing. Go!
Sports Daily is on KFH.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Thanks to Prayer Fire Coffee for keeping us fueled up. We appreciate it. Tommy, you've got some swag to tell us about here today. It is a Friday fit.
Yeah, 3570 Golf Co. And they are a great partner of the show. We have a great relationship with Dan and Katie Winters, a locally owned golf apparel company. I'm wearing one of their fantastic hats today here on the Friday Fit. So if you're on our video stream, you can check that out. And everything, all the apparel that they sell that all embodies this part of the country, the heartland, getting out and playing golf. It's that time of year. So go online, check out all of their designs of their shirts, their hoodies, their head covers, their hats, all of the above, 35x70golfco.com. And if you use the promo code Tommy, you get 10% off your first order. So go online, check that out today, 35x70golfco.com.
There you go. Looking good. All right, let's talk Royals here and open things up a little bit. Winners again yesterday, the explosion in the series, I think we all kind of expected to come at some point comes. They win 10-0. Nice day up and down the lineup. Bobby Witt Jr., 4 hits. Mikel Garcia continues to just do incredible things. Salvi had a couple more hits, 3 RBI. Vinny had a couple of hits, Tommy, and an RBI raises the average a little bit. That's what we need to see as much as anything. Jonathan India continues to be really good lately. So the main bat, you know, your main contributors, that top five, we've kind of talked about forever now that Mikel Garcia has entered himself into it. We'll call it a top five. Is looking really good. The bottom of the lineup contributing. Drew Waters continues to be there. So I think you're narrowing down at minimum, you know, what the Royals are probably looking for. And it's probably like one outfielder. So you can do that and everybody's lifting it up. But it's the pitching, Tommy. I mean, come on. Chris Bubich was great again. I say great. He had 6 hits, but he was was a game that was being let during, if you watched the game and were listening to the call, it was like he really had to work through that outing. I mean, they were painting that as an outing. He really had to work through. Gave up 6 hits and 7 innings, not a run allowed, struck out 7. Like, if that's working through one for Bubich this year, things are going to be pretty good, right? Like, he was great. Again, they're all great. It's been incredible.
Yeah, you don't get anywhere close to 14 of your last 16 games winning them if you're not pitching the way that the Royals rotation has pitched throughout this entire stretch of baseball. They've had 6 shutouts in their last 13 games, which is just incredible, just insane that the pitching rotation has been able to do that. When you've got, you know, 6 shutouts over the course of an entire season, that seems pretty good. But basically half of their last 13 games, they have shut out their opponents is insane. They've got a 2.91 ERA, the pitching staff does as a whole. And that blows out of the water what the Royals' best single season ERA has been. Now, there's a long way to go, obviously, for them to keep up that pace. But right now, they are pacing significantly better than any other pitching staff in Royals team history. So, you know, we can talk about how the bats came alive yesterday, and that's really important and hopefully will carry on into this weekend and beyond. But you're right. It is 100% about the pitching.
Yeah, it just, it needs to keep coming offensively. And the best case scenario for Kansas, like we talk about it a lot, the best case scenario is what they've got just does its thing, right? Like that's what you want to see more than anything else. I don't know that they're ever not going to have at least one hole in the lineup, but at that point, you're like, what are we even doing? Like it's when they're just not scoring any runs where you're like, okay. Like, this is weird. Like, why aren't they? And now they're starting. I think they're starting to break out of that a little bit. We'll see. They're about to enter a part of the schedule where they'll play nine games here, Tommy, against teams that entered yesterday at 500. So I don't want to say it's another like crazy difficult stretch, but it's not like the one they just played. So they'll be tested a little bit more here, and that's good. I tried to go back and look pitching-wise, like when they went through that really rough stretch, when their schedule was brutal and all of these things, were they pitching well in that stretch? And I think that they were starting pitching-wise. Of course, we know they didn't score any runs in that stretch, but I think the issue was the bullpen at that point, right? They had a lot of games where they would kind of get in that middle relief. Remember the sixth inning thing happening early in the season, and it was like they were the worst sixth inning team in baseball. They kept giving up, you know, runs and leads and everything else. Well, I almost think too, like we talk about the starting pitching, the way that they've been able now to settle that bullpen in, I think is almost as big a reason as to why they're just putting their foot on the throat of teams. Right. Like when you've got the kind of bullpen arms that they appear to have and you can go for maybe even five deep. We know from the last World Series run and those teams what that kind of bullpen means to a team. I would argue that this bullpen is deeper than those bullpens were. I'm not going to say they were as good on the back end. I don't think they are. And I don't think that's fair either. But they're deeper. You know, they stretch it out a little bit further. And I think that has also as much to do with it as anything. They're just not allowing teams any hope late in games.
They're at a point right now, too, with their pitching where they can be uber strategic. And this was something that I don't think is going to get a lot of play because it's really not like an overly sexy piece of the pie for the Royals right now. But I do think it is really important. Chris Bubich talked after the game yesterday that it was really important for him going into that start to go deep into the game. He knew in his mind he wanted to go seven, and he wanted to shorten the game up in that regard for the bullpen because they knew that the stretch of baseball that they're getting ready to enter into is going to be more difficult than the one that they're coming out of. And so he felt like if he could go seven innings and do his part in the same way that Michael Wacha did in the game before and shorten things up a little bit and not put a whole bunch of pressure on the relievers, then that should help them be pretty close to full strength or as much as you can be when you don't have any days off in the bullpen going into a weekend series against the Red Sox when things start to get a little bit more difficult for you. So I think that's a really underrated piece of the pie and, you know, a piece of strategy right there that really shows me that the Royals are trying to be as cerebral as they possibly can be in this stretch of baseball. I love that. I love the fact that they're strategizing that and talking about that.
They are thinking and acting like a, you know, like a playoff team now. They've definitely got that swag. It's funny because that was such a big thing for the, you know, 2014 and 15 and even 16 teams. That 16 team obviously didn't get there, but they were that same way. And it's so interesting that this is a total, like there's no Salvador Perez, and maybe he's the tone setter on that. I don't know, but he's like the only guy, right? Like he's not the same. You know, you got a different manager, you've got a different general manager, you've got all different players, and maybe we need to give Salvador more credit for that. But they do have that. And yeah, I agree that they're thinking about that because the reality is they don't have a day off here until the 15th. They go six more. They go six straight before they get a day off.
And it's one thing, by the way, for Matt Quatrero to be strategizing that and the usage of the bullpen with no days off and going into a more difficult stretch. It's another thing for your starting pitcher in the finale of the series that against a team that is inferior to be strategic about that and be thinking about, okay, where are we going after this? And we're going to need our bullpen. I mean, that's such a team-oriented mindset and not something you're going to get in clubhouses all over Major League Baseball. That's what blew me away when I read those quotes.
Yeah, it's it makes a lot of sense. We'll see, though. This, you know, this series against Boston, they get Crochet. It's Reagan's Crochet on Saturday at Kauffman Stadium. Are you kidding me? Reagan's Crochet. I mean, that's incredible. That's going to be awesome. I hope that's a sellout, and it might be when it's Boston. But you get that. Mother's Day, moms, they'll play in the afternoon. But it's we're going to find out here real quick, because nine straight against 500 teams is different than the White Sox, the Orioles right now, Colorado, you know, a lot of these teams, and that's what they should do. And it's not everybody does this. You've got to beat up on the bad teams. And they did that over that 16 game stretch that we identified as this, like, you must take advantage, because when you look up and down the schedule, there aren't a lot of these stretches in there. This might be the only one. I'd have to go back and look. But to have that many games against teams that are struggling right in a row, like, you got to take advantage. Well, they won 14 out of 16 of those games. Like, you can't take any more advantage than that. So pass with flying colors. Now, how do you advance it to the next place? And that's where I think that psychology will be really good. You know, they're talking about that stuff. If Chris Bubich is saying it's important for us to get deep into the games because of what's coming up. And it is. He also said after the game that it's like next man up, right? They're feeding, those starters are feeding off of each other right now. Like, they don't want to be the one. Like, they're all trying to, like, keep it going to get it to, you know, to get it where it needs to be at the end of these games. So it's been great. It's been awesome. That series, you've got Lorenzen, you've got Reagans, you've got Lugo. Isn't it weird when you look at, like, the Royals rotation? The Royals are going to take a great rotation into every series they play because they don't have a weak spot in the rotation right now. That raises their floor so much. I mean, like every team in baseball historically, you roll starters out there like that. It's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, even some of the best teams in history had a fourth or a fifth starter that you didn't really totally have a ton of faith in. And if they could steal one, great. But you went into it thinking, like, okay, if we can just minimize the damage from this guy. I mean, even, like, remember back. I know there have been several teams that have done this, but one team that comes to mind, I remember the Astros when they were, you know, rolling in their World Series appearances and all of that. I remember they even had, like, an opener in their rotation, like, especially in the postseason. Like, they had a guy that they would throw out there for a couple of innings and then turn it over to the bullpen. It was a bullpen game a lot for, you know, that team. And other teams have been that way, too. The Royals up and down, you've got five strong arms right now, and none of them are showing, you know, any cracks in the foundation. Is that going to continue the entire season? That's unrealistic. You're going to see somebody probably have an outing that's not good here and there. Like, that sort of thing is going to happen. But by and large, I mean, it's incredibly solid. And that should translate to the rest of the team, where they know every outing they should have a chance to win the ball game. And then it goes back to what we talked about before. It's put back on the shoulders of the offense to give the starter a lead. That's been critical in this stretch of baseball. Give the starter a lead and then let them go to work. That's how they've gotten to this point, and that's how they'll continue.
And it's going to be the way, you know, and injuries are going to play a factor in this at some point, right? That's the crappy part, is that we're going to have to deal with injuries at some point. And they've built, that's what I feel confident in, though, is the depth of all of this. Like, if you just feel like they're in a good place to deal with that. I just saw this, and this is interesting. As we're talking baseball, we're talking the Royals. John Morosi put out a tweet here. The Orioles have the third lowest chance of making the playoffs among all the American League teams. I think a part of that is the division that they'll play in. The Orioles, of course, are part of this hot streak for the Royals. And he's saying that there is a decent chance they become deadline sellers, which is wild to think about. But because of the hole they've dug themselves in and the division that they play in,
He calls it the notion that they could be deadline sellers is very, I don't want to miss, is a realistic scenario. Now you're talking about teams getting in the mix as we're talking about the Royals and them trying to load up and potentially try to win a World Series this year. That's a really interesting team to let's just file them away. They've got some young players where to a great listener who brought up the, you know, the log jam at first base dilemma that the Royals face right now. That's an interesting team because they've got a lot of good young players. The Royals, who in the offseason made an old fashioned player for player, like contributor for contributor, Jonathan India for Brady Singer. They're both good players. They just fit needs for each team a little better. All that. Boy, Baltimore has a lot of guys. Think about a name like Colton Cowser, Tommy, young guy, corner, you know, can play a corner outfield spot that has, you know, similar like OPS to Vinny Pasquantino. Just like keep them in mind because that's a team that actually has a ton of tradable parts if they decide to go that route. That's a
You could look at somebody like Kjerstad as, you know, potentially maybe being on the block. He's a young guy. I doubt they would trade Cedric Mullins, but you never know. I mean, if they're in full blown, you know, selling mode, that's probably unrealistic, but they've got a lot. One thing the Orioles do have, they have a lot of outfielders, and that's a clear deficiency for the Royals. So, you know, I know those two organizations don't particularly care for each other. And so sometimes that that can maybe prohibit a trade, you know, happening, but you never know. I mean, like, especially if they can't not turn things around, I still think that they will. I think they've got enough young talent where I think that they will enough to not be sellers. Yeah. I don't know if they're, you know, going to the postseason or anything, but I think if they, I do think they've got enough firepower on that roster where they may not end up selling. But hey, if things continue going the direction that they have been, anything is possible.
Shout out, by the way, you mentioned Heston Kjerstad. Shout out to the Texas Panhandle. I covered his older brother in high school. I wasn't there for Heston's rise, but his older brother was also a really good baseball player, as you could imagine. It's interesting that you brought his name up. Yeah, they've got some guys. We'll file that one away. We'll file that one away for later. But as part of the conversation we've been having is what could happen, what could make sense, what could be on the radar. But right now you can just kind of kick back and say 14 out of 16. What are you going to do? Right?
15 out of 17. I mean, I keep going back. They had that finale in that bad road trip. So.
And it'll be I'm also excited for them to hit a beefier part of the schedule now. Like put it to the test, right? Put this to the test against some better teams here. Now they get these first three at home against Boston. That's good news, right? That's a nice way to dip your toe into the water. And again, we'll point this out because it's been an important thing so far this year to look at what's coming on the schedule, right? Once it gets June up until probably the trade deadline, well, there's not a lot of relief there. For the June particularly is rough. They end May with Detroit, Tommy. They go on the road to St. Louis in that stretch. They play the Yankees. They play the A's. They go to Texas. They go to San Diego. And they go. They get the Dodgers in that stretch. Seattle is at the end of June. At Seattle, I should say. Like June looks daunting. So win as many here as you can in May while you have the schedule in your favor.
Yeah, don't you feel like that, you know, they've been able to get out of their own way a little bit, especially during this palate cleansing homestand and just the stretch of games that they just finished, to where I feel a little bit more confident in their abilities going into series like what they're getting ready to go into against Boston. So while the schedule may be more daunting, this team is playing significantly better. And I believe, and this may be an area where you and I maybe differ a little bit, I don't feel like the reason that they're playing better is just simply because they played bad teams. They beat up on bad teams.
No, I don't think
I feel like they've, I think they've rounded into form. They did what they've needed to do against those bad teams, but I don't think it's like they play good against these bad teams and then they just go get shellacked against the real contenders. I don't believe that at all. I think they have rounded into form, especially pitching. And it's just going to be a matter of consistency with the lineup. And if those two things continue the way that we've seen, I feel good about it.
Do I think the schedule has contributed to being able to go 14 and
probably
two?
It's a contributing factor.
But I also think they're not, when they went through the bad stretch, everybody but Bobby Witt Jr. and Mikel Garcia were slumping, you know, to start the year, like literally all of them. That's also not happening now. Tommy, this is trade here between the Steelers and the Cowboys. George Pickens is a Cowboy now, and he's saying all the right things from what I can tell. But, you know, he was obviously given lots of opportunities to trash the Steelers as he was introduced to the Cowboys media, and it didn't always go well there. And, you know, I think a lot of people point out early, like, oh, there's a troubled player going to a place that always seems to be full of drama and trouble. But test one, and he did a really nice job. He didn't say anything ultra negative. He's just kind of like, turn the page, everything's gonna be good. So that's a good sign. I think if you're a Cowboys fan, that could have gone much worse, and it didn't. So maybe he has learned a little bit in his time in the NFL.
We'll see how things go, though, when the heat of the battle, you know, gets turned up, and when we're actually in games and things like that, and you know, emotions run high. And you know, if the situation happens where he's not getting the targets that he feels like he should get from Dak, or the Cowboys are losing games, or he feels like he's getting outshined, whatever that word is, by CeeDee Lamb. If CeeDee Lamb is outshining him, we'll see if George Pickens can still say all the right things. I mean, like, yeah, you can win the press conference. That's pretty easy to do for the most part, but we'll see what actually happens when we get into games.
Yeah, I think stylistically, and we'll talk to, you know, Felix Johnson about this, because I know he has thoughts on it. I think stylistically, it's the question, right? Like, how does it all fit together? He's a star. Like, George Pickens is awesome. A big part of his awesomeness is contested catches and deep balls and things like that. Dak, I mean, go back historically. I can't think of a receiver like that that has been Dak's bread and butter, right? Dak is not that guy. So how does Pickens – and I think the problem for Pickens is, and the unfair thing is, that's really all he's been able to do in Pittsburgh, because they haven't ever had any real good quarterbacks. I mean, Russell Wilson was the best he had, and it went well a lot of the time. But the thing that Russell Wilson did was that. So it's like, okay, he's never really had a chance to just do everything, because he hasn't had a quarterback that's been capable of getting him the ball. Dak Prescott's a really good quarterback, like a really good quarterback. He's good enough to win a Super Bowl, you know, that whole conversation. I don't know, but he's a really good quarterback that can put up numbers. I think it's a really smart move by Dallas. I think it's probably going to work. There aren't many wide receivers in the league where George Pickens could walk in the room and say, all right, that's the dude. CeeDee Lamb's one of those guys in any locker room he's in. There's maybe four or five of them in the NFL. He's one of them. So I actually am pretty optimistic about it. I'm just curious to see stylistically what it does. Does it put Dallas over the edge? I don't know. But they finally made a big move when they talk a big game. So as much as we trash that, I got to give them some credit for finally actually making a big move.
Yeah, I mean, the Cowboys needed to have somebody opposite of CeeDee Lamb, and we'll just see, you know, if George Pickens can be that guy. There is a laundry list, by the way, of Steelers receivers that when they left Pittsburgh to go to their next team did not pan out. And I'm sure that it's that way with a lot of teams, but I mean, it is a laundry list of top tier receivers that did not turn into anything else after they left Pittsburgh. Guys like Antonio Brown in the past, but even like more recent guys like Chase Claypool, Deontay Johnson, guys like that have not, you know, really done a whole lot. Juju Smith-Schuster is a name on that list as well, who he's probably had a decently productive career in the role that he's been in with Kansas City in two different stints. But as far as his overall production has declined since he left Pittsburgh, a lot of receivers are that way. When they have left the Steelers organization, they've not been overly productive at their next stop. We'll see if George Pickens can buck that trend or not, but it's going to be interesting because he's probably not going to be playing the same role that he played in Pittsburgh. And so I'm not sure that it's realistic to expect that he'll have the same kind of output that we saw him have with the Steelers.
And then there's the Steelers. And then there's the Steelers. What the hell are they doing? Like, what a weird offseason for them. This is a team that typically, you can just pencil into the playoffs, right? That's what they do every year. It's all they do. They just go to the playoffs. Last year, it was the, did they go last year? Was last year the first in Mike Tomlin, but they were right there? Can't remember. But they're always right there, right? They're kind of like the Cowboys, honestly. And then they just, you know, and then they just kind of mail it in a little bit here. They still don't have a quarterback. You're going to replace George Pickens now, maybe with Alan Lazard, if you get Aaron Rodgers. Like, they're not doing anything. They're not doing anything with any of this. And it begs the question as to why didn't they draft a quarterback? Like, you're not doing anything with this. You think Aaron Rodgers and Alan Lazard are going to put you over the hump instead of Russell Wilson and George Pickens? Like, come on.
Yeah, didn't the Jets already try that? Wasn't Alan Lazard on that Jets team with Aaron Rodgers?
Where he is now, I think.
Right.
I think he's still there.
I mean, I feel like the really difficult thing for the Steelers, and probably, I mean, they may look back on this offseason as a total disaster, because if Aaron Rodgers decides that he wants to drag this out even longer, and that's, I mean, nobody should be surprised by this whatsoever, that he's been doing this. He's making the Steelers chase him. And Mike Tomlin is a pretty stubborn guy, as we've seen throughout the course of his time in Pittsburgh. And he's probably like, hey, we want you, Aaron, but we're not going to court you. We're not going to chase you. We're not going to, you know, fawn all over you and do all of that. At that point, like, we might be looking at some kind of stalemate here. And all that does is set the Steelers back, and it doesn't move them forward. And then they end up moving away from George Pickens, and they were able to get, I feel like a decent return for him. But you posed the question, why didn't they draft a quarterback? I posed the question after the trade was made, why didn't they trade Pickens before this year's draft? And then they could have strengthened their draft positions, and they could have made themselves stronger right away. To me, all signs are pointing to a rebuild. Yep. And, but that was not the, that was not the mentality that I feel like everybody had about the Steelers until they made this trade. And it, but it kind of makes some of these other things make sense.
It does. And that's like, Pittsburgh does not have a history of that, right? They don't have a history of firing coaches. They don't have a history of it, but all of this, like, I don't see any other path. Like, it's going to be Aaron Rodgers will play there. It won't work. There'll be drama involved. He and Mike Tomlin will probably butt heads. It'll be the end of Mike Tomlin's time, which a lot of Steelers fans want anyway. It'll be the end of Mike Tomlin's time in Pittsburgh. They'll bring somebody else in. Again, all of this, why didn't you draft a quarterback then?
Like, right.
You had a position to at least take a swing on somebody. You didn't even have to swing big. You didn't even have to do it in the first round.
And it could have very well been that they didn't like, you know, anybody right. That was on the board.
And I mean, get that as remember, far as like the first round quarterbacks.
For a while, Shedeur Sanders was connected and linked with the Steelers to an extent. Like, I know that they met a few different times. And of course, Sanders, we all know the saga with him in the draft. But right. I mean, there were quite a few quarterbacks after the fact. And you know what? Maybe they wanted to trade for picks for next year to then be able to maybe use those picks to move up in next year's draft. And maybe they like a quarterback in next year's class, which I know at least on paper looks to be a better quarterback class in the draft. So maybe that's their strategy overall. Like, they'll use Aaron Rodgers as a 1 year stopgap type thing and then find their quarterback of the future next year. And they wanted to load up on picks for next year to then be able to have a little bit more leverage. I mean, I could see that being the case too, but still, it's not like any of this has been vocalized or verbalized to anybody. Like, we're all guessing, like, well, what the hell are the Steelers doing right now?
Haven't we seen a little noise from TJ Watt? Like, a little, like, what are we doing here? I think this offseason, like, it's not going to work. And they just didn't feel like a team that needed to be in the position to do that. Like, this was a team, like, they've been a quarterback away for like 6 years. Right? Like, they've been right there. Like, what do you do? Do something at the position. Something. They tried Kenny Pickett. It's not like they didn't try through the draft. They did. Didn't work. Try again. Like, this was a year, even if you don't love the quarterbacks, you could have gotten one of the top five guys, like, in the third round or whatever. Like, whatever. Just, like, you're not swinging big. You're just doing something. So, you know, we'll see. It's not going to work. The question then becomes, what happens with Mike Tomlin? I assume his time will be done. I think he'll immediately be hired somewhere else, and you'll have like Andy Reid version 2.0, right? Like, guys that just win a ton of games every year, coaches that just never have bad teams, don't go somewhere else and all of a sudden have bad teams. There's like no history of that in the NFL. It's Andy Reid. Like Andy Reid and Mike Tomlin, so funny that they're in the same state. Like they're the same to me. Philadelphia got, they were like, well, Andy Reid will never get it done and he'll never do this. And they ran him out of town. Same thing's happening with Tomlin. And like all the rest of us, the rest of the league who've been through bad stuff, you're like, you guys are nuts. Like you're crazy. If you don't like, if you're dissatisfied and try to run people out of town, like wait until you get into purgatory in the NFL. Like just wait, talk to a Browns fan. You think Browns fans would like to have Mike Tomlin in there? You think Browns fans would like to be 9-7 I mean,
you remember
every year?
The Browns get to play those guys twice a year. Like they're intimately familiar with Mike Tomlin. Like,
what are we doing here? That's what. And this is an organization that like never makes mistakes. It doesn't feel like. And I feel like this has all been such a colossal mistake. They'd have been better off with. Well, that's probably not fair. Rodgers is what he is. If Rodgers would have signed a long time ago, I'd have been like, okay. You know, he's got Pickens there. Like he's got some, now they trade away Pickens. Rodgers still isn't there. It's like that. No, it's not working.
Think that the Rodgers saga, like this is, anybody could have predicted this a mile away.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
And it's just like, what kind of tolerance do you have? What kind of patience do
what
you
kind
have?
What tolerance do you have for a league average 42-year-old quarterback?
Totally agree.
It'd be different if this was MVP Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, I've been saying this for years. I mean, even during his Jets tenure, it's like, man, why does anybody put up with this crap? Like, this is so ridiculous and so stupid. And, you know, for a guy that is going to maybe at best give you average play, why is everybody bowing down to him? And it must have just been, I think, for Pittsburgh, a combination of a lack of excitement about any of the guys in the draft and a pretty thin free agent class as well. And ultimately this is the situation they found themselves in.
You did it to yourselves and now you trade it. It's just whatever. It's not going to work. All right, we'll come back. We got another hour of Sports Daily. Don't go away. It's all Brockton Caster. It's a Friday TGIF. We're getting you ready for the weekend.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Kester.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. Glad to have you with us here on Sports Daily. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Kester. Tommy, I was scrolling. Social media there during the break, and it's the anniversary of one of my favorite days ever on the show. The day that you had a little procedure.
It's been a year. Wow.
A year, okay. I guess. You get served the memories. It's been a year. And it was just great. This great fun on the show that day. We had Earl, from the Top Rope delivering one of the great calls of all time. And, that was a fun day.
You know, now that I'm a year removed from the little snip that I had done, I have to say, like, my life really hasn't changed a whole lot. And that's okay. I mean, look, like the pain was temporary, but you move forward, you get it done. It wasn't pleasant, but it wasn't the worst thing ever either. And life goes on.
Yeah. That's good. We don't need to go down that road completely. Can it be weird? But it's a great show. That was a fun day. Welcome back in, everybody. Another hour of Sports Daily here. It is all Brockton Caster. Max Powers producing for us. Max is locked into the NHL playoffs right now. Max and I's teams did not play last night. So, you know, as far as the bet that Max has me on for hockey, it was an off night, which is for Winnipeg and Toronto to meet in the finals. And if they do, I'll get to get a new golf driver because I put a little scratch on Max's picks. Last night, I know you had the Capitals beat the Hurricanes. We'll get some Hurricanes fans listening to the show. And the Oilers beat the Golden Knights. So that was happening. In the NBA, Steph Curry is not rushing a return from a what he calls a tricky hamstring injury. I mean, look, they're not going to get it done in that series without Steph Curry. The Timberwolves win, kind of no problem. They might be able to win a game, I think, in the series without Steph. They're not winning the series, though, without Steph. And so, you know, that's out there, too, as the T-Wolves get that one done. That was the only NBA game last night, but Minnesota sort of had to have it.
I can't imagine that they can't, that Steve Kerr cannot draw up a way to get Steph Curry involved in a game that doesn't involve him running up and down the court multiple times. You know, like post him up in the corner and just let him shoot.
Yeah. I mean, you could probably draw up some like inbound stuff, but at some point you got to get down on the other end. So maybe in spots, maybe you keep him available to come. But then at that point, if you do that, like in potentially the biggest spot of the game, you're having him come in cold. It's a tough spot for the Warriors.
Has that ever impacted Steph Curry though?
No, I mean
if you're coming in cold or not, it doesn't really matter. If anybody can do that, he can't
sleep laying down. I get it, but it's not ideal. It's not ideal for the Warriors. I don't know that I thought they were going to win that series anyway, but that's a tough blow. I hope that he can come back because I am so intrigued by that series, the style differences, the age differences, right? Like I think there is a bit of a passing of the torch right now to Anthony Edwards as potentially that next dude, best player in the league. Is he the next kind of banner carrier? Could be. And, you know, he's got to kind of go through Steph and this, you know, in the old guard, the last dynasty to get it done. I think this is an intriguing, but if Steph is out, then, you know, whatever, I'm sure, you know, Timberwolves fans are like, yeah, they don't need to see him play anymore. That'd be great. Tonight it's Cavs Pacers. The Cavs back up against the wall. Probably a little bit surprising to a lot of people that they're down 0-2 going on the road to Indiana. The 2-1 seed, or well, shouldn't say the 2-1 seeds, the 1 and 2 seeds kind of facing the same thing. And then the Thunder. Now they got to go to Denver and follow it up, Tommy. And the Thunder bounce back in a big way. Honestly, I doubt Denver cares too much about game two. They're not worried about game two. Game three feels pretty big for Oklahoma City to me.
If you're Denver, how much of the film from game two do you watch?
None.
Do you just throw it away, just burn it and be like, look, that was an aberration. We're not even going to go back and look through it. Or, I mean, are there things that you can try to take away from that if you're Denver to make sure that same sort of thing doesn't happen again in game three?
I think you literally just don't pretend it didn't happen. I mean, they were so clearly happy to get out of there with the split, right? I think the better, well, not better. I think the real question is Oklahoma City that much better than Denver? And Oklahoma City, I guess by the same token, how much of game one do you watch if you're Oklahoma City, right? Probably more, I think.
I think if you're Oklahoma City, you watch more game one than Denver watches of game two.
Yeah, I think so. But they almost won game one too. I think Oklahoma City's okay in that series. They probably should have won game one, and then they do that in game two. That is something that washes away the sting of, you know, not winning your games at home. But you do have to take it on the road against a team who won a title a couple years ago, who has the best player in the world in Nikola Jokic, and you got to go get it done at their place now. And for a young Oklahoma City team, that's probably going to be a tall order. I think that series, I mean, Knicks Celtics is rightfully the series we've all kind of like emotionally invested in. If you're not like a specific fan of a team, Oklahoma City Denver to me is probably the next most intriguing as far as like what's going to happen here in this series. Pacers and Cavs, no offense to Cleveland and Indiana. And it's just like, okay. I mean, I like the. I've always liked the Pacers. I hope they do well. But this Oklahoma City Denver series is kind of the one for me.
Well, and don't you feel like, and I might be alone on this, but the winner of Oklahoma City Denver that series, I think will probably end up in the NBA Finals. And that's not taking anything away from Minnesota because, again, Anthony Edwards is outstanding, and I think that he is that next guy for sure, like the it guy in the NBA. But I don't know. I mean, I like either OKC or Denver to be that representative from the West, regardless of who wins that series.
Yeah, I probably don't agree with that. I think Minnesota is really good. And I think if Golden State's healthy, I think they're capable too. So we'll see. Maybe if Steph Curry's out, but I'm probably a little higher on Minnesota than that. We got to take a minute here for the brilliance of X yesterday. Didn't yesterday on X feel like this is a total pivot, by the way, but I wanted to get this in and maybe we talk about it next. I don't know. The jokes yesterday, like that felt old school. That felt like old school X Twitter of a decade ago. I've long said, like, I consume that app the most because it used to be like the haven for real smart alecks for humor. And it's always been like where the sports news happens. So it's always been, but man, like that was the best of social media to me. Like, just like great jokes all around. We're all having fun with one of the great world events that's happened in a while. We're all having fun together. And then you get that it's an American from Chicago that's a sports fan that's like oh man, it was nonstop yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, all of the debates on social media yesterday about whether or not the new Pope is a Cubs fan or a White Sox fan, Cubs and then fan. They talk like they no White Sox fan. Did you not catch that? He's a White
no,
Sox
fan.
No,
I saw Cubs fan. Everywhere.
No. He is a White Sox fan. So one of the local Chicago TV stations interviewed the Pope's brother, who said that no, we grew up White Sox fans. Apparently their mother was a Cubs fan, but the kids grew up as White Sox fans. And so White Sox Nation has just absolutely embraced him with all of that. So, and you know what? Look, like the White Sox are really bad. So they need something positive to hang their hats on.
For him. That's right.
If you exactly like, can we have the Pope start blessing this team a little bit? Because clearly it's not working out well for him.
Listen, I'm Catholic, so don't nobody think I'm like taking shots, but like the jokes are great. Like my favorite of the day, the Bulls intro to the like overlay.
That was pretty good.
Man, that was good. But the picture of him with God bless everyone in the world except Green Bay is probably my favorite.
That was good. Yeah. I like the one where, somebody posted a picture of Mike Ditka and said, you know, look, like if there was going to be a Pope that was from Chicago, it needed to be this guy.
We all thought it'd be Ditka.
Yeah, for sure. But, you know,
congratulations to all our great Catholic listeners out there. It's a big day in American Pope. It's a big deal. It's a big deal. I did not expect that. I got to tell you, like I did not expect that. I mean, we've covered this, you know, on the news side now for a couple weeks, and I don't think anybody saw that coming. Right. It's cool. Like as an American Catholic, like it's like I honestly never thought it. I thought it might not ever happen, to be honest with you. And it's right now. And it didn't take them very long. So there must be some good agreement there on this.
How many Packers fans do you think are in the process of converting to Protestantism?
Yeah, they're just like, you know what? Like,
we can't get behind it. We
can't do that.
We're deconverting from Catholicism from it.
Yeah. What a great day for jokes. What a great day for, like my mom used to call it, good, clean fun. You know, what a great day for good, clean fun, right? No,
the best one though was that, it was all over social, but, you know, how Chicago got a Pope before they got a 4,000 yard passer. That one was pretty good too.
Days to elect a Pope 2, days to draft Shedeur Sanders 3. Like there. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
It was, there was just like a constant gold mine all day long. My favorite of the process, there was a tire fire or something in Tuscaloosa and a news outlet had sent that out. And this was the day before yesterday. And so it's black smoke in Tuscaloosa and somebody, you know, reposts that or whatever. And it's just like black smoke. Alabama still doesn't have a starting quarterback named. Like, it's just, like,
I love it.
This is so good. I love it. Great jokes. Congrats, Pope Leo, and to the American Catholics out there listening to the show. It's a big day. We'll come back. More Sports Daily coming your way right after this.
Oh, okay, take it easy. We're going on the air.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
Welcome back, everybody. It is Sports Daily. We're glad to be with you on this Friday, getting you ready for the weekend, a big weekend, Mother's Day weekend. Glad to have it. Glad to have all these moms in our lives. Tommy, let's go back to the Royals here for those just jumping in. By the way, you can leave your comments with us on the show through our video stream. It's easy to do there. That's available to you on Facebook, on YouTube, on X. You can leave us your voice messages through the Odyssey app. Glad to have that available to you. Or you can call us the good old fashioned way, 869-1240. The Royals are right now, Tommy, if you look across baseball, they are in the mix to be one of the best teams, and they're still 2.5 games back in the division. Cleveland, Detroit, right there. By winning percentage, three of the four best teams in the American League right now reside in the AL Central. Seattle is the other in there. If you go over to the National League, a little bit different. There's a bunch of really good teams in the National League and a bunch of really bad teams in the National League. The American League, though, is even like we kind of thought it would be. Three out of the four best teams, though, are in the Central at the moment. We have to factor in and think about like which teams are going to make moves, which teams are going to trade, what's going to come of all this. What do you think the likelihood is that holds up, right? We know the Yankees look like they're going to be really, really good. Is the Central, I think we all agree the Central's good. Is it that good, or is there a little mirage there, you think?
No, I think it's that good. I think it's going to be a three-horse race down the stretch. And I'm not a big believer. I know you are probably more than me of the Twins being able to get back into contention. I just don't see it with them this year. I think that they're probably a 500 team would probably be where I would put them at. But from the perspective of the teams in front of the Royals, the Tigers look like they are for real with their pitching and what they've got. You know, I know we've talked a lot about the Royals pitching. Tigers pitching is right there too. And they're pretty complete. They've got a great manager in AJ Hinch who can win a ton of games. And then, you know, Cleveland is Cleveland. They're always there. A lot of times it's not like they've got major massive stars on their roster, but they can get it done as well. And so, no, I do think that we're going to see a pretty stiff piece of competition from the two teams in front of the Royals in that division. I do think that holds up.
Yeah, I do too. Because if you look, what teams have I think we all think Detroit's, well, we don't all probably think Detroit's for real, but Detroit's again, like they got the best run differential in all of baseball right now. I don't know what else they need to show us. And they kind of beat up on Kansas City a little bit too in round one. But what team is going to, you know, fly up into that stratosphere that's not already there? I would still say Texas, because I think their offense at some point will come. And I think it's starting to a little bit, but they've had a really slow start. Seattle is for real. Their pitching's really good. I don't know if I think Houston's going to get there. This is kind of their rebuild year. Minnesota will be better, but I don't think they'll get to that stratosphere. The Yankees are already there. We talked about the Orioles. They're the other team I think you'd expect to, but man, they're so far back now. I don't know if it's going to come for them this year. Tampa's not going to like make additions. Maybe Toronto, but they haven't been very good. The American League feels pretty average this year, I think, is the point of all of this for me. Like, you go to the National League, the Mets are very good. Philadelphia is very good. I think Atlanta has a chance to be. I don't know if I think Chicago's very good yet, but they're playing really well right now. The Dodgers, the Padres, probably the Giants are all very good teams. Maybe even Arizona, who remember added Corbin Burns. Like, there's all these really good teams in the National League. And I think you pointed this out before the year. And then in the American League, it feels like there's four or five like really good teams. And I think that's good news for the Royals.
I think it is too. But when, you know, three of those teams are in your same division,
that
I
mean, sucks. But you just,
it's that not spread out amongst all three of them.
That doesn't hold you out of the playoffs anymore, though. So, you know, I think
it doesn't hold you out of the playoffs, but it could certainly be the difference maker between getting a first round bye and playing in a wild card series.
Yeah. What do you think, by the way? You always want to buy when you can get a buy. Man, if you gave me the choice, though, of getting a buy or winning a wild card series, I'd take winning a wild card series. Obviously, there is the chance you lose the wild card series, but I don't like that much. I think playing there, and they've done a good job of shrinking it down where it's less of an impact and you don't get to set your starters. So maybe now it's not even – there was a time, though, where I think the bye hurt you a little bit, and I think they've done a pretty good job with the shaping of things. I don't know how much of an advantage it is anymore. And honestly, if you're the Royals and you're five deep, we talked about – it's funny you said that because TJ Cleland and I were talking about this yesterday. Like – who's your game one starter right now in a playoff series? Is it just kind of by default Reagan still?
I think it's Reagan. It's
as
Reagan's.
You're watching carve people up every start.
If the postseason started today, you're starting Cole Reagan's in
you
game
are. One. I agree. And I think, but how much of a difference is there between Reagan's and the rest? And this is a good thing. I'm not saying that as like a deterrent to Reagan's. Like,
it's a lot more balanced from top to bottom in that rotation, at least as of right now, than what we saw last year. I mean, you knew that it was Reagan's, you knew that it was Lugo. And then from there, it was kind of a toss up a little bit. I mean, you know, yeah, you had Brady Singer that, you know, would do some really good things for you. Alec Marsh was there. He was either really good or really bad. It wasn't until late in the year that they had Lorenzen, and then Michael Wacha was, you know, kind of your middle of the rotation type guy. It's a lot more of a balanced top to bottom rotation than what we saw a year ago.
Well, and it was really good a year ago. I think it's top heavier. We'll see. We got to get them up against some.
Wait,
good
you
offense.
Think the rotation is top heavier this year than it was a year ago?
I think it's as balanced, but I think it's better right now. Right.
Sure,
you know what I mean? Like it's as balanced, but like it's like the top end of it. Not
because I feel like it was top heavy a year ago.
That's
Reagan's and Lugo were fantastic.
I said that. Yeah, I said that wrong. It's like they're all toward the top, right? Like so it's not as like these guys are incredible and then these guys are serviceable. It's like all of these guys kind of shifted toward the top. Would make it heavier, but then that doesn't make sense. Anyway, yes, I agree. Like it's a better rotation right now than it was a year ago, which is just so incredible because it was so good a year ago. And that's one of the things that we'll watch as they play better teams, as they play better offenses. Getting seven of the games in that stretch against the White Sox and Rockies is going to help your starting pitching. Playing the Rays in that stretch is going to help your starting pitching. That doesn't mean they're not awesome. They don't have a chance to be the best rotation in baseball because I thought they did have a chance to be the best pitching staff in the American League before the season started top to bottom. It just means, can you expect to allow 30 runs in 16 games when you're playing playoff caliber teams? No, I don't think so. Like, I think it's not going to stay where it is now, but it can still be the best in baseball. And so we'll find out, you know, as time goes on, I think one of the interesting things to watch will be like, how does it stack up as they start to play really good teams, right? Can, you know, is Lorenzen as effective as Bubich against a really good lineup? Because I think that's going to tell us a little bit more about, you know, how that would potentially stack up later in the year. How do these guys navigate dominant offenses, which they haven't been playing lately, and that's fine. But when they do, like, which of these guys are most equipped to take that on? We know Reagan's is because he strikes everybody out, right? We've seen enough from Lugo over the years to know he's fine. So now it's like Lorenzen, Bubich, maybe a little bit of Wacha. Like, which of these guys? That's how I think you have to look at it a little bit. I mean, it's going to be Reagan's if he's healthy in the end because he's got the best stuff.
Yeah, and when you're playing, you know, these divisional opponents that are ahead of you in the standings, I mean, every single one of those games will have the feel of a postseason baseball game. And so whether you're trotting out there Cole Reagan's at the top of your rotation or maybe your fourth or fifth guy in Lorenzen or Bubic or whoever, it's got the feel of a late season or postseason type ball game because you're chasing other playoff potential teams ahead of you in that division. And so I think that knowing that, as at least as of right now, you've got a rotation that you feel comfortable and confident in any one of those five guys, I mean, that's got to help. And we talked about it earlier in the show, help the Royals feel like there's never going to be a game that we do not have the capability to win just solely based on our starting pitching. And again, like, you can easily, and I do this all the time, like with teams that I follow, I look at probable starters when, like, you're getting ready to go into a new series, right? And you're like looking at the matchups and, okay, so the Royals are going to have this guy, and this guy in the next three game set. What's the likelihood that they're going to get this one, or this one based on the probable starting pitching? And there was a year ago, I'll be honest with you, you saw like Alec Marsh pop up there. You're like, okay, that could go either way. Like, that could, they could either, you know, shut out their opponent, or they could get shut out by their opponent based on Alec Marsh starting that game. Or, you know, there were times when Brady Singer wasn't overly effective. There were times that Michael Wacha wasn't overly effective last season. Now you look at it, and I know that, like, Saturday's game, for example, and you mentioned this last hour, that you've got Reagans and Crochet, and that's a heavyweight matchup between two great pitchers. So again, like, that could go either way. But by and large, when you're looking at pitching matchups and things like that, there shouldn't be any game moving forward that you look at and you're like, yeah, that one's going to be way too difficult for the Royals to get anything done in. No matter who the pitcher is.
I completely agree on either side, right? Like, I don't care if it's Crochet against Lorenzen. Is Lorenzen the fifth starter? Probably. Doesn't matter. But that's where you're going to have to lean into the offense a little bit too. Like, you can't expect the Red Sox offense is good enough, I think, for this conference. Like, you can't expect Lorenzen to hold the Red Sox scoreless through six, right? That's not fair. And so that's where the offense has to be able to help you out. And so it's all full circle. Look, the fact that a month ago we were moderately concerned. It wasn't like danger or anything like that with the Royals. But I think they were playing a stretch where you're like, ugh, like we had concern. It was small, but it was there. Fast forward a month to now, you're having the conversations about how to position yourself and where do they position in the postseason. That's what happens with the kind of remarkable run through a 16-game stretch they just had. We do know it's a streaky team. We do know they're capable of it flipping around. They were that a year ago. I think the starting pitching and the bullpen even more is going to raise the floor and lessen the possibility that they can go on another one of those bad streaks. But if the offense does what it did when they did go through their bad streak, then that's going to happen no matter what the pitching does. They have to be able to score runs. I think yesterday was a good indicator of some. You ever hear the term positive regression? It's like this. It's this weird thing because you hear regression, but like regression basically can happen to the average, whether you're below or above. It's just getting to the average, right? So positive regression is you're regressing to a better place, whatever. That's, I think, what we're seeing a little bit out of the lineup. You're seeing a lot of positive regression out of a lot of these dudes. And so that's helping. Salvi's a year older though, right? What if Salvi's home run power just takes a step back as he gets older, right? We know he's hitting a ton of doubles and everything looks fine. I don't have any concern, but what if that power wanes a little bit? Vinny's never been a power guy. Bobby Witt Jr. is going to hit for power, but that's kind of it, right? That's it in this lineup. So as you look at it, how much do they need it? I think you can start to ask those questions. Well, they don't if everybody's at what they do on a normal basis, right? Because they're built to run, to advance runners, to, you know, they're kind of a singles offense, and that's okay. Or do they need it? And I think it's fun to have, you know, those kinds of conversations now. Like, is it good enough? Is it not good enough? This is what you get to do when you're watching a really good baseball team, even when it's in early May. And Royals fans deserve it. But those are the kinds of things we look for. Again, you get three against the Red Sox. You're going to face pretty good pitching in that series. and we'll test out the, you know, test out the offense. They're at home. They scored 10 runs yesterday. Great. That's what you want to see, right? That's what you have to have when you're beating up on people. But I don't, I also don't want to glaze over the fact that they didn't score many runs in the other games of that series, right? 3, 4, and 2. They combined for, what does that make? 9 runs over 3 games against the White Sox. Let's watch it when they play some good pitching. Like,
yeah, you know, and then on the flip side, obviously it is the White Sox. They held the White Sox to 4 runs in 4 games, which, I mean, by the way, I don't know if you knew this, that sets a franchise record for the fewest number of runs allowed in a 4-game series against an opponent. Cool. That's a franchise record. So, you know, yeah, when you're averaging 3 runs a game, 9 over 3 games, that's not a ton, but when you're only giving up an average of 1 a game, at that point, that doesn't matter. So, yeah, I mean, you're going to get better hitters. You're going to get a better lineup. You're going to be up against better pitching in this series this weekend. And so that's why I really like the fact that the finale of the series yesterday, again, the bats kind of came alive a little bit. We've seen that a few different times, right? Like the final game of a series that happened against Baltimore last weekend, the final game of the series, they came alive with the offense. That happened in the Colorado series. It was like the final game of that series. The bats came alive again there too. So they've got, they just need to carry that on to start off a series. And hopefully they do that tonight.
Well, and it's like everything's context, right? You go into a 4-game series, you score 19 runs. You're like, all right, that's about 5 runs a game. That's really good. That needs context. No, you scored a whole bunch in one game and not very many in the others. So, you know, you would rather have 5 runs every game than 3, 2, and 1 runs and then 10, right? That's not, but that's why I like that. I'm ready for the schedule to turn over a little bit. This stretch was awesome. It was fun. May very well be the most fun stretch we have with them all year. I'm ready for the schedule to turn over a little bit because I want to see everybody get tested a little bit. I think that's important for this team to know as they have to make big decisions. I've said it since the beginning of the offseason. I think this is a year the Royals are going to be hyper aggressive at the trade deadline. They were a year ago. I mean, they were aggressive in context last year. But to the point of the caller yesterday, how can it get better? To add some power to the lineup. Jesse chimes in real quick before we go to break. It'll be one of the best to watch if Cags is able to come up and produce like everyone is thinking he can. I agree with you, Jesse. I don't want to put that kind of expectation on him. I mean, he's 22 years old. There'll be growing pains there. They don't need him to come up and be the player he'll be 2 or 3 years from now. They just need... It'd be nice if he came up and provided them the power that they're lacking. They don't have a spot for him right now, though. And that's the conversation that's... If he keeps hitting and Vinny does not, it's going to be a weird and uncomfortable conversation that I hate having. So I want them to play Cags in the outfield because I don't want to have it. I don't want to have that conversation. Everybody loves Vinny Pasquantino too much. And I agree. I'm in that camp. But it's the only conversation you can have if it's the call and Cags doesn't play the outfield, unless he plays 3 times a week, which nobody wants either. So I'm just catching up on the what we were talking about earlier, the White Sox versus Cubs Pope drama, Tommy. Very fascinating. Cubs tried to claim it. Cubs tried to claim it. What kind of a great sports fan are you when your brother just becomes the Pope, right? One of the more historic days in the church ever, the American Pope, right? It's always historic. It goes back 2,000 years. You get the American Pope, you're Catholic, your brother has already been a cardinal. You're so proud of all the work he's done over his lifetime. You see the Cubs in that great moment of glory. All this is happening. The Cubs say, you know, hey, he's a Cubs fan. You got to be a next level sports fan to be. Hang on a minute. Now, hang on a minute. No,
time out.
No, he's not. Like, we got to sit. Like, I'm very proud of my brother, but I got to tell you right now, there's no way in hell we're taking, you know, for lack of a better term in these circumstances, we're not going to let this stand. He is not a, like, that is awesome. That's so good. That's so great.
Well, and think about like just the 100+ years that the Cubs didn't win a World Series. Like, I'm sure that in their minds, they're probably like, hey, we needed some divine intervention. And so clearly the new Pope is a Cubs fan because he helped lead us to our first championship in over a century. But then, you know, the White Sox step in and look, let's be real. the White Sox more than the Cubs, maybe the White Sox more than any other team in Major League Baseball or in the entire sports kingdom, they need a W pretty bad. Yeah. And so this is as big of a W as you can get. So I don't blame the White Sox for wanting to take that away from the Cubs. Like, look, we've always been kind of the little brother. We don't usually get the kind of attention that the Cubs get and all of that. We're taking this. Like, we're claiming the Pope as one of ours.
Yep. I it's just like, I appreciate it so much. It's, And the White Sox part, like, of course, it's the brother that is cracking me up. Like, this moment for your fan, like, everything, to take the time out of the day, like, it just happened to make sure that everybody knows, like, hang on now. No. We love our sports here in America. Hopefully for the White Sox, right? There is a history of like popes in baseball. They've had, I was reading, they've had some masses at baseball stadiums historically. My big question is, as you know, a Catholic and you know, a big fan of the last pope, like, if you're Leo, do you predominantly like speak in English when you're, or do you speak in Latin, or do you go Italian?
He did like a opening prayer or something.
Yeah.
He didn't speak English for that.
Well, and that's because of, you know, where you are, right? You're in the Vatican and everybody there understands a certain language, but that is kind of remarkable. Like, you must now do this most important thing in another language.
And wasn't his background up in America, South America?
Peru. Yeah. Peru, like, it's not like, if it's got to be Latin or Italian, that's ever been his dominant language. So that's really interesting. And you know, Pope Francis, I suppose, did the same thing because he was Argentinian, I believe. He's South American. I wondered that. But it'll be interesting to see it, because if he's speaking English, like, it'll be a lot easier to, like, lock in as Americans to, like, what's going on there. It's a cool day. Great humor yesterday. Appreciate everybody contributing.
Apparently, he went to Villanova.
Yep. And Villanova, so, man, that's also
Villanova's in the news a lot. I mean, you look at the Knicks Celtics series right now, there's quite a bit of Villanova representation. And then you add the Pope in the mix as well.
I saw there was a great one yesterday, like, Popes by conference, Big East 1, everybody else 0. Like,
want to talk about, you know, it just means more in the SEC. Well, the Pope didn't come from the SEC.
Yeah, that's right. It's just so much good stuff. Again, congratulations. What a crazy day that was, in a good way. Just a fun, unexpected. I couldn't stop smiling at everything, all about it. Like, the fact that it was American, everything was good. And then, like, everywhere you go, like, can we get back to that on social media? And I don't know as much about the others, but, like, can we just get back to everybody having fun together? Like, everybody was having fun together yesterday, whether you were Catholic, whether you weren't, it didn't matter, whether you're a sport, like, everybody was having fun together yesterday. Can we go back to that? That was a great day to be alive. Rick says he speaks 5 languages fluently. Well, there you go. I speak one and
kind of, we kind of speak one,
and I know Spanish words. That's about
quesadilla does not count for a Spanish word.
What's that?
Quesadilla does not count as a Spanish word.
No, it doesn't. I was okay. I was okay with my Spanish long time ago. Not anymore. But that, thanks Rick for the clarify. I knew we would get an answer to that question. What a fun day. What a fun day to be there. Tommy, headline-wise, I think we have it here. We can get a little predictive with playoff games tonight in the NBA. You and I are new to this, though, so please, nobody, like, run to the apps and place any wagers. Cavs are favored on the road. The way that series has gone, that's interesting. And then we talked about that Thunder-Denver game. We got the same situation there. Now, that one surprises me a little bit. They're 5.5-point favorites on the road. I would guess, based on what you were saying earlier, that's a Denver spot for you.
Actually, I'm going to go the other way. I think that's an Oklahoma City spot. I mean, I think that when you blow out your opponent the way that they did in game number two, they just need to carry that on. And I think they will. I mean, that doesn't take anything away from Denver, doesn't take anything away from the best player in the league in Nikola Jokic and all of that. But, man, I think that the way that the Thunder were able to respond and get that revenge in game two, I do think they carry that on tonight.
I think I probably agree with you on that. We had a manager firing in Major League Baseball, Derek Shelton, which is interesting. I think Pittsburgh's expectations were a little bit higher. Paul Skeens has kind of struggled in a couple of starts. That's early, though. Well, that's early to fire a manager.
Yeah, but aren't they like 12 and 26 or something like that? I think that was their record when they let him go.
Yeah, and certainly they thought they'd be better, but I don't know how much better. You kind of need a fall guy. And usually it is the manager to do it in May. I mean, maybe the expectation is that high. You know, but we'll see.
When you've got the reigning rookie of the year and, you know, all the different things that, you know, Paul Skeens has done, and I know he hasn't fully delivered. I mean, yeah, you certainly feel like you've got your anchor in the rotation and you should be better than 12 and 26, you know, in the early part of May.
It's it's early to me. It's early. But that's fine. Want to mention real quick, Shocker softball fell yesterday in the AAC tournament. That will end their season. I guess it's a disappointing season. But you want to talk about raising the bar and raising expectations? It wasn't a bad season at all. But maybe they didn't reach their own expectation. I fully expect them to retool, reload, and get things locked and loaded in for next year. But that's the end of their year. So that was out there yesterday. They fell to North Texas in that game.
They had to replace a ton of production, you know, and they've had to over the last couple of years. And that's one of the, you know, I guess one of the burdens that's on your shoulder if you're Christy Breadbinner, when you've got all of this explosive talent over the last several years, having that consistency where you're not rebuilding, you're reloading every year. And so, yeah, I'm sure by their own expectations, and actually Kevin Saul mentioned this on Wednesday when he joined us, that it was disappointing and they didn't reach the expectations that he felt like they should, both softball and baseball. That, you know, I know Christy Breadbinner is one of the best coaches in the country. And so being able to attract that top tier talent, they've got the facilities to do so. I fully expect them to be right back in the mix next year.
Yeah, I do too. I do too. Rick, ask a quick question going back to the Pirates conversation. How can they win the Pirates? They spend less money than any other team in the last 20 years. Yeah, they're toward the bottom, but honestly, like, that's not an excuse. The Royals went through this for a long time. Before the 2014 season, right? How many? It had been 25 years, like, where they were just never good. Right. That's what the Pirates have been going through. But I don't think the spending alone is the excuse there, Rick. I mean, you look at it right now, the A's have spent less than them, are 20-18. We know the Rays historically have been, and they're not great this year, but they've sent teams to the World Series with low payrolls. Cleveland's always good and never spends money. Milwaukee spends money, but not this year, but they still are pretty good. The Royals are bottom 10, and they're obviously really good right now. And I think they're primed to spend more. But there are teams that don't spend a lot of money that win all the time. The Pirates, unfortunately, are one of those teams that it hasn't worked for in a very long time. They do, though. Like, if you were looking at teams, Tommy, that, like, you had to, like, go inherit to turn around, they've got Skeens already. They have one of the best pitching prospects in all of baseball. They have O'Neill Cruz to build around. Like, there are worse foundations to go to than Pittsburgh. So that's what I'm saying. Like, the early firing is interesting, not just because they're bad, but I think their expectations were a lot higher, honestly. Like, they've got some pieces there. And so I think they're telling you. Now, are they going to go in and, like, spend like the Royals have spent? Probably not. They don't need a new ballpark. They don't need all these things. Like, they already have one of the best parks in baseball. So it's a shame that they don't spend more, but I don't think that's the only reason they're not winning. There are plenty of teams that don't spend money that win lots of games.
They've got the foundation. I think you mentioned O'Neill Cruz, who is one of the more exciting players in Major League Baseball. So you've got a young, exciting star in your lineup. You've got a young, exciting star in your rotation. Yeah, they probably need to fill. And they need to be able to fill the other holes in their lineup and in their rotation for sure. But there should be, I feel like, a decent amount of optimism surrounding the Pirates. And so, I mean, was there an opportunity for them to have a winning record right now in May or even compete in their division? That might be a little over the top, but at least better than 12-26 or whatever their record is right now. So I'm not overly surprised that they moved away from Derek Shelton, even though it's fairly early in the season. 12-26 is underperforming for sure.
And who knows, like baseball manager, like Derek Shelton's probably not the problem, right? He just, you've got to have a fall guy. The problem is organizational. I don't know that there's, and this is a topic for another day as we get into maybe the dog days of the summer. I'm not sure that I would say there is a more emphasized like front office than baseball. You know, in football, you can kind of toil around and make a couple of bad decisions, but that really, like, you can get through that in a year or two. In basketball is hard for me to evaluate because I don't quite have the same grasp on why it's so hard for some teams to win continuously when there appears to be like the deepest point basketball. But baseball, like, the mistakes you make now in baseball can haunt you for like 5 or 6 years. That, like, it's so hard to turn it around in baseball. I think it's the hardest. All right, everybody. That's it for us on Sports Daily. Been a fun week. We'll see if the Royals can keep the magic going through the weekend. We'll tell you a little bit about the schedule. You've got Shocker Baseball coming 6:15. Coverage begins tonight, 6 o'clock tomorrow, 12:45 for Shocker Baseball on Sunday. The Royals will move to KNSS on Sunday at 11. They actually will be on KFH. There'll be enough time there between soccer baseball, so that'll be 6 o'clock on Saturday. That's what we have. We'll come back Monday. We'll talk about all of it, so don't miss it. For Max, for Tommy, happy Mother's Day weekend, everybody. I'm Jacob. We'll see you Monday.